You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, March 20th, 2011. This is episode 177, a tech and teaching gold mine. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 177, and joining me as usual, Sally Draper from beautiful Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you as usual. We're back on a regular schedule. Mm-hmm. I'm back from Mississippi into the springtime in Minnesota.
So how was Mississippi?
Mississippi was warm and glorious. I enjoyed every minute there, but always good to come home as well.
Absolutely. And also joining us, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, Gail Potratz from New London, Wisconsin. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you?
I am fine. I'm doing great. I'm just still recuperating from shoveling 13 inches of snow of spring last week.
So apparently you weren't in Mississippi.
No, I was not.
Okay.
No. So we're still trying to wait for some stuff to melt around here because we're sure dying for springtime weather.
No, that's for sure. All right. The topic du jour is our custom when Gail is on the show is education. And what we've been able to come up with for our topic this week is kind of interesting and a resource that I think is pretty important or valuable or could be very valuable to most of our listeners, those certainly that are involved in any kind of learning, and that is a magazine, both online and offline, called, what is it, Tech and Learning?
That's right, Martin.
Tech and Learning.
Yep. And I have a little story to kind of kick off this segment of the show, and that is that this spring I was teaching a one-hour class for MLC, an online class, mm-hmm. and it was basically a group of mostly teachers who were learning about creating websites. And we had a student lounge discussion forum, which was kind of the off-topic area, if anybody had anything to share that really wasn't related to the course. And somebody suggested, hey, do you get this email from techlearning.com? And have you seen this article about thus and so? And it was just really neat to see, you know, not a large class, but probably 75% of them do receive the email on a regular basis and were real enthusiastic about the resources that were being shared by Tech and Learning. And it just kind of spoke to me that this was an excellent resource that other teachers may not be aware of and that they can take advantage of via a free subscription to the print magazine that'll get delivered to you, or a online subscription where you can just get it digitally. And so just wanted to focus the limelight a little bit in Tech and Learning's direction, because I think they have a huge amount to offer us. And maybe it's a good way for you to introduce some technology into your school if you aren't really up on that so much in your school setting yet. So a good discussion starter, if nothing else, because
sure,
they have a lot of really cutting-edge articles.
So who would you say is the average reader? What's the profile of the average reader of this magazine? Is it for more of the advanced person that's already using technology in classroom, the beginner, or is it a cross section? Do you get is it elementary? Is it higher ed? Is it high school? What's your sense for that?
Actually, I think they kind of cover all those bases, Martin. They even have a specific email just for chief information officers of school districts or whatever.
Really?
So
okay.
They've got the beginner level information intermixed with, so you're the tech coordinator, here's how to do mm-hmm. things for your campus or whatever. And just always something new and interesting that I think many, many readers could benefit in the education spectrum. You know, it doesn't have to be a certain techie person on your staff. It's certainly mm-hmm. a way for newbies to get introduced to technology as well.
Sure. Gail, I'm assuming you're familiar with the resource, right?
I am familiar with the resource, and Sally told me about it when we talked about the show. I have not been a subscriber to the magazine itself. Mm-hmm. I do get it in my email. I have to admit that I have not been a all-the-time reader of this source, mm-hmm. because there are so many that come across,
right.
of course.
Right.
But it is a good one. I decided after going through these that I would actually sign up for the paper copy of this particular magazine, and I'm going to read some myself, I'm sure, but then put it in our faculty lounge.
Okay. So I think our approach here for the podcast is maybe to highlight a few items from the most recent issue to give a flavor for our listeners to see if this would be something for them, and maybe that's where we should go next, is just a couple of the sample articles. And we've lined up, what, three or four of those?
Sure. Right off the bat, I'll point our listeners to top 10 sites for educational resources. And basically, Tech and Learning has a blog, and there's constantly new articles and things, and they have a lot of guest bloggers. So this one in particular was done by someone named David Kapler, and he listed his top 10 sites that teachers can make use of. And mm-hmm. what was interesting to me is, as much as I've been talking about Web 2.0 and education settings, I can't say that I was familiar with very many of these sites, and there are some real winners for me on this list, starting with Thinkfinity, which is actually done by Verizon, I believe, and it's just loaded with free lesson plans. They've got all kinds of teacher resources available on the Thinkfinity website. So good pick by David right off the bat, mm-hmm. but there were others. Gail, maybe you had a favorite from that list.
Well, when I went through the list the first time, my eyes stopped at Super Teacher Worksheets, because this is something that I actually am always talking against worksheets and more toward student-based projects. I'm kind of getting away from worksheets, so when I saw it, I was like, whoa, you know, I wasn't so thinking, why should that be in this list? But as I looked into it, I realized, you know, actually, myself, I'm always looking for worksheets. Right now, I'm teaching in language arts verbals, and there's usually one page in the book about that, and kids don't get it in one page. So I looked over the grammar worksheets pretty carefully. There were some good ones in there, and so I ended up being kind of impressed with the worksheets, even though at first I was kind of, it took me back that they would list that as the top 10 source.
Interesting. So it looks like, I'm just looking over the list, it's somehow curated by some central source, so there's a level of quality, I think, that they're trying to ensure that gets on the site, so it's not just a kind of a portal where everybody uploads their stuff, but they have, I think, it looks like they've gone through,
yeah,
and recognized that there are some best-in-class kinds of worksheets that they're posting on here, and then categorizing so you can find mm-hmm. it easily.
The indexing was done very well, and I didn't see anything that I would consider junk. I thought it was all pretty high-quality stuff, so okay. That's always a good thing.
Okay, and that's, I think, one example of a reason to look for these professional journals and trade magazines, so to speak, that they've done some of that snooping around the internet and kind of brought together resources, so you're not spending a lot of time in Google just trying to get the right search terms to get the resources you need, that they've already done this, since, you know, education is divvied up by subject matter, and it should be easy to collect all that, and some of these resources have done that for us. So that's a good find.
Sure. And there are others on the list. You know, if you're a teacher and you're in need of a lesson plan for a particular topic, you know, there's Teachology, which is kind of a takeoff on technology, mm-hmm. but Teachology. There's Educational World. There's Ed Helper. And Cyberary Man instead of Library Man, Cyberary Man. So, you know, this can just be a launching pad, this one short article to a load of teacher resources that are available via the internet. And again, just kind of trusting in the fact that they've looked at these and kind of vetted out the best mm-hmm. ones
right.
For us.
Very valuable.
another article we were going to point our listeners to was one in an ongoing series, A to Z Web Tools, where they've just looked at the letters C and D. So our letters for the day are C and D. And this massively long list of C and D resources that are available there, things like the Clay Animator for stop motion animation instruction and stuff. Corkboard Me, which is a sticky notes kind of web app. And DoppelMe, which, Gail, I think you have some experience with.
Yeah, DoppelMe, I think I had it for a pick one time, long time ago. It's just a very slick and easy and fast way for kids to make an avatar. So if you're using VoiceThread and you don't have it in your private school account area, then I don't like to put the kids' pictures on with to identify their posts, but so that we use these little avatars. So the kids love making them, and then we put them on our blogs, and we, you know, put them on a lot of different things. So that's a pretty neat one. The other D that really impressed me was I had never seen this disposablewebpage.com. And I've often wondered, you know, there's so much stuff on the internet, and people put stuff out there, and, you know, it's not used after a while. There's just a lot of garbage taking up room out there, I guess I'd say. And so this struck me as kind of a ecology of the web type thing. You can make a web page and use it for, I think it's up to 90 days, but after 90 days it just kind of disappears. So it leaves the web uncluttered when you're done with it. So I thought that was kind of a nifty idea.
Interesting.
Very green approach to web design.
Yeah.
Very good. You know, in our interview today, we're going to talk with Rachel Malcook, who's a teacher at Trinity in Waukesha. And Rachel is talking about technology as an alternative assessment tool and just using technology and allowing students to use technology integrated with their projects and things that they're doing at school. And maybe you're doing that kind of thing already in your classroom, but you're looking for new ideas. Just this one list for the letters C and D would probably allow you to spark some new ideas to include as technology tools for your students. I mean, there's everything from cartoon makers to, you know, the clay animation and everything in between. So it may very well be that just subscribing to this resource would spark some ideas for you to integrate new things in your classroom.
That whole concept, yeah, and I'm just thinking through this, that when you subscribe to these kinds of magazines or resources, there's going to be a lot of stuff that hits you as, you know, maybe I could use that at some point in the future. So the I think it's important to develop some kind of system where you can add these to a list, or we would, I guess I would maybe suggest a mind map where you could categorize these for future reference, kind of a someday maybe list. You're obviously not going to use each of these every month as they come down the pike, but, you know, when you're doing some summer planning, you'll be able to go back to a resource that you've collected from not just this resource, you know, some of the things that we're sharing from this magazine, but from conversations, from other resources that you get from all over the place. And, you know, some kind of system is really going to be important because there's so many ideas that come at you all the time that you really have to have a way to put it all together and in a usable fashion when you're going to need them. So all these great resources are fine, but you need some way to categorize and collect them, tagging system of some sort.
Right. That's an excellent point, Martin. And that's why I appreciate what Sally does for the show here with her organization of the show notes and then the archiving of things, because that's exactly what I do, whether it's on the Wells Tech podcast or whether it's in a list like this. I go through the list and I use my Digo account.
Right.
And I have folders in there actually for the different subjects or the different ideas that are included in Web 2.0 tools. I started out long ago having a folder called Web 2.0 tools. And I realized quickly that that really didn't help me find things much faster, so I had to index a little better than that. And then when tagging came out, of course, that's helpful too. But I think people can use Digo very effectively. We've talked about that a while back.
Not only can you put together lists, you could use tags, right, in Digo, so they could be by subject matter or even by grade level, I suppose, right?
Right. Teachers love lists. They like those little folders.
Okay.
I always like to think of it, the best analogy I can come up with is it's my tool belt.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I'm not going to use all my tools all the time, but I love to store away new tools and be able to pull them out and make use of them at the appropriate time. So definitely adding to my tool belt as I read the Tech and Learning magazine.
Sure.
So a couple other articles of note. One was a personal learning network for parents, kind of a different take on the PLN concept, kind of encouraging your parents to connect and share things with each other, maybe through email list or phone list or even through Twitter accounts or whatever. So I enjoyed reading that article. And then the last one to mention would be Going Digital, 10 Points to Consider When Transforming Towards Digital Curriculum. Things like your infrastructure, you know, what does it take to do cloud computing at your school? And also kind of the emphasis on professional development for your staff so that if you do go digital in a lot bigger way, that your staff is adequately prepared to be in a leadership role in that digital curriculum environment. So lots of good ideas from just these four sample articles that we picked out from Tech and Learning. And I think you'll find it to be a valuable resource if you dig in and look a little deeper as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think with that parent one too, we talked a little bit about the fact that we have to investigate new ways to do things, and I think that it's fair to say that most of our well schools have trouble building interest for the traditional PTA or PTO type organization that meets after supper and gets people together. So some of these kind of tools and networking parents together this way on school topics, seems to have some potential for our schools.
Mm-hmm.
Even on a topic like biblical parenting, those types of ideas, getting into some kind of social network where people can learn about that. They may not have to all gather together face to face, but I guess to me, hopefully the goal is if you do something like that, at some point in time, you will want to gather face to face and meet with these people, and then, you know, the whole fellowship idea can build in your church and your congregation, because I think it's up to us to try to use these tools in that way, because we are losing contact with people, with our members and with our parents, and that's a concern of mine.
Mm-hmm. So how do people get signed up for the magazine, Sally? You've got that information there?
Sure. We'll have two links that we share in our show notes. You can sign up for the print magazine to be delivered to you complimentary as long as you're in the United States at least. And you can also register if you prefer to get just a digital version of the print magazine. You can do that as well. And then lastly, we'll have a link for signing up for their newsletters, because they have a regular newsletter and then they have one targeted toward the chief information officer, which in our schools is probably that tech coordinator position. And so lots of different resources that you can make use of from Tech and Learning, and we'll have links for all of that in the show notes.
Nice. Thanks for your work putting that together, Sally and Gail. That's good stuff. Why don't you go ahead and interview the interview with Rachel. What prompted you to reach out to Rachel and get her on the show?
Well, Rachel is a Twitter buddy of mine, and you'll hear her talk about that actually as we go through the interview. And recently she tweeted about a blog post where she had made a presentation at the Metro Milwaukee Teachers Conference, and she and her principal actually collaborated to present on the topic of technology as an alternative assessment tool. And it piqued my interest. She's got some great resources, which she's freely shared online, and we'll have links to all of that in the show notes. And so Rachel and I had a chance to get together via Skype and had a little conversation about alternative assessment. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is Rachel Malcook, who is an eighth grade teacher at Trinity in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about your call there at Trinity, the various hats that you wear, and other things that interest you.
Well, I've been teaching at Trinity since I graduated from Martin Luther College in 2005. I am the eighth grade homeroom teacher, which also includes the English and language arts for seventh and eighth grade. And I also do all the music for fifth through eighth grade at the school. Officially, I'm not a technology person. I used to teach computer classes, but that got switched around when some other teachers needed to drop writing, so I'm teaching writing and they're teaching computer. But I've always been very interested in technology and how to use it in the classroom. Ever since I was in high school, I was the computer nerd, and everybody always asked me to help them with their problems. So that's kind of the capacity I'm serving at Trinity right now. If anybody has any computer issues, I'm the person they usually come to first. So,
excellent. We love our nerds on the Wells Tech podcast.
Self-proclaimed. It's all right.
Yes. And I guess I've kind of clued into your blog and things because you're a computer nerd on Twitter as well. So I follow you on Twitter and know that you're a blogger and everything. Mm-hmm. So got good credentials there. What about your interest and hobbies?
Well, I do a lot with social networking. I joined Twitter initially to just use it because I thought it looked cool. And through that, I met a whole group of people that started a blog and group called Fit Milwaukee. Oh. So I've met a lot of people in my healthiness journey, and they actually even encouraged me to do a half marathon last winter.
Awesome.
So that was the kind of thing that got me started with Twitter. And then I started following other teachers and just looking into all the stuff that everybody was offering, and that's pretty much what I do with my spare time.
Cool.
Go on and,
cool.
And read other teachers' blogs and see what everybody else is doing in their classrooms, and a lot of computer time.
Oh, very good. All right. Well, one particular blog post that you put out there recently was about presenting at the Metro Milwaukee Teachers Conference. And I understand that you and your principal, David Schrader, teamed up on a presentation about technology in the classroom, specifically titled Technology as an Alternate Assessment. So maybe you could start by telling us what you mean by alternate assessment and how technology can facilitate that.
Absolutely. We decided on alternative assessment using technology because technology is something big that's the present. It's not a future medium, it's a present medium, and it's here, and we should be utilizing it as much as possible. An alternative assessment is basically something that is used besides a pencil and paper test or a big project that is assigned at the end of a unit to show learning of the concepts that have been taught. Mm-hmm. It's a way to differentiate learning. Students can use what they're interested in to show that they have learned, and it also helps them take ownership as, you know, this is my project and it's what I want to do, and using the technology that I like. So it's important to us and important to me because I want to give my students as many different kinds of learning experiences as possible, because who knows what's going to be out there in just 5 years from now when they graduate from high school.
Absolutely. So do you find that it really piques their interest? Are they good candidates for using technology in this way?
They really are. We finished reading a book called The Red Pyramid, and I gave my class about a page worth of different ideas of things they could do for their final project. And I got so many different projects that were just amazing. They really took it and made it their own and showed that they actually cared about the book that we read in class. So, and the other thing that I have recently done is we use Accelerated Reader at our school, and the seventh and eighth graders have been consistently low in their goal setting and reaching their goals for the months. And I decided to implement a policy that if they set and made their goal for the month, they could bring their iPod into school and listen to it during study hall on the Friday at the end of the month. And the results were crazy. I think I was going from maybe 30% completion up to 70 and 80% of the students finishing their
classes.
Just because they wanted to bring their technology into school and use it. So
that is so cool. We're actually just wrapped up a discussion at the top part of this podcast about Tech and Learning Magazine, and their cover story this month is called Bring Your Own Device. Mm-hmm. So I think you're really cutting edge with that. And obviously you hit a nerve with those students if you got that kind of response. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
So very good. Well, I guess I'd like to kind of focus a little bit on your principal tie. And you aren't the only blogger in your school. And I see that your principal, David Schrader, has also got a Podbean site out there. And he's doing some podcasting and sharing resources as well. I think that's really neat that you have the principal buy-in. Obviously, you guys were partnered up on this and everything. Can you tell a difference in your school because this technology initiative is kind of coming from the top down as well as the grassroots efforts that you're doing there in the classroom?
I think a lot of the teachers are seeing what we're doing and getting interested in it. I helped the fourth graders. They Skyped with another classroom in Arizona and talked about the different things about each state that they live in. So the students from Arizona would share something about their state, and then we would share something about Wisconsin, and that was pretty cool. So I think the teachers on our staff, you know, now that we all have smart boards in our classroom, that was one of our big pushes in the past few years. They're getting more used to having the technology in their classroom, and I think the students are appreciating the fact that we're not always just sit in our desk and read this book and use a pencil and paper kind of thing. So it has improved.
That's awesome. You can definitely see the ripple effects there. So very good. Well, what about recommendations for teachers who may be listening today, Rachel, how they might get started with some of these alternative assessment assignments that you're including there?
I think the way I really got started, I think I used Prezi as my first big assignment that I gave to the kids. So that's, I think, a good stepping stone. It's not too difficult to learn, and it's free. So that was always one of my things that I looked for. In my blog post, I linked to my presentation notes. And in that, there are links and links and links of things that we have done, things that people can look for, or, you know, the Podbean page that my principal put together. I linked to Prezi. I linked to some of my students' work. And really the way to start doing this kind of project is to make sure you lay out what you want your students to do. And the best way I found to do that is to make a rubric for them.
Oh, very good.
So you can give them the rubric at the beginning of the project and say, this is what I'm looking for. You can use whatever way you want to fulfill these requirements, but as long as they know kind of what goal they should be shooting for, that helps them too. And the tool that I use for that is called Rubistar, and there's a link in my presentation notes to that as well. So they it's really nice because they have pre-made templates. You can make your own. You can save your stuff there, and it's really easy to use.
I just love the Web 2.0 world, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. So just for those who may not be familiar, Prezi is an online presentation tool. It's a lot different than the traditional linear PowerPoint slideshow where you go one to the other. This one's kind of got a lot of Zoom features and you can jump around and things like that. And I have introduced that with my students here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye. And one thing you have to do before you make an assignment with that is you have to teach the kids the tool so that they can use it effectively. So I'm sure you have that built into your process as well, introducing new tools and letting them experiment with it and things like that. So
yeah, anytime I find a new tool, I learn enough so I can teach them the basics. And then the amazing thing about it is a lot of the kids will say, oh, here's how to do this thing that we didn't figure out before, and we'll learn about it together. So that's been really, really nice.
Yeah, I like that electricity. You just get them started a little bit and kind of step out of the way and let them go with it. And then they're teaching it to you, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's cool stuff. Well, I wish I was in your classroom, Ms. Malkuk. That sounds like a fun place to be.
We try.
All right. Well, continued blessings there on your teaching ministry at Trinity. We greatly appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Our thanks to Rachel, and thank you, Sally, for coordinating that. Interesting stuff, and it sounds like Rachel has no shortage of irons in the fire when it comes to technology in the classroom.
Yeah, I was really excited to learn about her link to the Rubistar site. I know rubrics are a very important component as you're assigning all these projects and things. You want to make sure you're very clear on what your expectations are and how you're going to do that evaluation of projects. And you know, it used to be a lot more straightforward when you could just give them a test and, and check right and wrong. But now that we're branching out here with the use of technology for assessment, those rubrics can be very important. So thank you, Rachel, for the link there, and we'll make sure and include that in the show notes, as well as a link to her complete bibliography from her presentation, so you can check out other resources that Rachel shared.
And Gail, Rachel paid you a visit, didn't she?
Right. Rachel was actually visiting our school for a day. It was the day actually before she gave this presentation, so it wasn't too long ago. I met Rachel on Twitter as well, and we had planned for her to come and visit, and we enjoyed having her here. I think Rachel's doing such a great job of being a leader at her school. She doesn't have the title, as she mentions, and you don't need the title. Every school needs someone, though, to be a leader in technology, and I'm sure at some point in time she will have a title because she's very good at what she does, and I love her approach with student learning. You mentioned the rubrics, which are important, Sally, and the other thing I think she mentioned that I just underscore is she, in her assessment, she provides choice for the kids, and I think that's a key as we move forward, you know, letting them, there are many different ways to assess, many different products that you can produce or whatever, and she does a good job at that. So just think, starting out already at this point in her career with using technology, I guess I'm a little envious. It was just in the later years of my career that technology was available to us, but think what all of what she'll be able to do in her teaching career and how many people she'll be able to affect with her best practices.
Right.
So,
and nice approach, you know, to take some time and visit another facility and some other people who are doing things in technology. You can always learn from somebody else or just learn from the conversation and the dialogue and sharing ideas. That's a great approach rather than kind of sitting there on an island and trying to figure all this stuff out by yourself.
And just encouraging one another, too, against, you know, there are always some obstacles, and the encouragement that we can give each other towards those things is valuable, too. I really, really, really enjoyed my day with Rachel.
Good, good. And thanks again, Rachel, for taking the time with us. Let's move on to ministry resources.
Well, we recently came across an announcement from the Glow Bible people. You might remember that we actually interviewed Nelson Saba from Glow Bible probably a good 2 years ago almost, mm-hmm. when the GLOW Bible was first introduced. And what GLOW is a multimedia experience of the Bible. So the Word is there, and it's enhanced with images and video, and it all comes together in a really neat package. And finally, as of March 28th, the GLOW Bible is now available for the Mac. And they also came out with an iPad edition. And thanks to our listener, Perry Lund, he sent us a YouTube video link to a demo of the iPad version of the GLOW Bible. So you'll want to watch that video and see what is capable of on the iPad.
Look, that was out just out yesterday. I don't have that on my iPad yet. I've got to get that going.
Get with the program, Martin.
I do. Okay. Beautiful.
And the neat part now is on an iPad, if you have a new iPad, you'll be able to project that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always kind of a big drawback of the first generation there. But to me, that's the neatest thing about the second one now. So I am going to have to get one because I can't do that with my
of
first
course.
One.
Of
course. It.
Now it's not even a question.
That's right.
All right. Let's move on to picks of the week. Gail, you are a semi-regular guest, so we'll let you kick things off.
Well, as a language arts teacher, I am always looking for better ways to do vocabulary. And mm-hmm. I'll put a shout out to anyone that knows a great way to do that with technology. Just let me know, because I'm always looking for ideas. I found a very good site that we enjoy in our classroom. It's called No Word, without the W, KNOWORD.com. And what this site is... just a fun game with meanings of words, definitions. So it's competitive because you're timed, and you try to see how many words you can type the meanings in correctly in a row. So you go for a string, who can get the longest string. And the kids love to play this. For my way of thinking, I wish I could put my own vocabulary words in there, because then it would be just what I'm looking for. You can't do that, but it still is fun to play, and the kids actually play it at home and tell me their scores, and so I know it's something they like to do. Just kind of a fun way to start the class, or once in a while we'll just play a game if we have a couple minutes between things, and I know they need a break before we go on. So they give you a word, they give you a blank, and that has one letter filled in, and then they give you the part of speech and the meaning of the word underneath. And then you have to just type the word in, and then they'll tell you correct, and you'll move to the next word. The tricky part for me is, that since that first letter is already in there, I always want to type the first letter of the word. So I end up having to take time to delete. So that always frustrates me. The kids don't seem to have a problem with
right.
that, but I can't train my brain as fast as they can.
Okay.
But it's a real neat, fast-paced thing that the kids enjoy, and they gain some vocabulary knowledge.
Good. Grade level?
I played in eighth grade. I think it's probably mid to upper. It seems to be very semantic web in that after you play it for a while, like the first time we did it, we had really hard words, and it seems to repeat words that you had wrong, and
okay.
so it has some sense of what you've been doing in there.
Mm-hmm.
Knows you a little bit.
Okay.
You do have some options as to a couple choices as to levels, but the levels are all at least middle to upper,
okay.
I would say.
All right. Sounds good. No word.
Yeah.
All right, Sally, what you got?
And I'm going to point our listeners to a blog post I came across last week from the Cool Cat Teacher, who's a very prevalent educational technology blogger and Twitterer, Vicki Davis. And she wrote a blog post called Facebook Friending 101 for Schools. And this is not a short blog post. It'll take you a little while to work your way through.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, she's cautioning and explaining about the way the privacy settings work in Facebook, and cautioning teachers about friending students on a personal account, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she's against the concept of friending, but the fact that you friend certain people opens them up to friends of friends getting access to them. And so she does a really good job of explaining that, how you're like a human hyperlink between you know, people that you friend on Facebook. And then she concludes her blog post with a really excellent list of recommendations, including educating about it. She even says if you have a driver education program, you should have a digital citizenship education program. It should be part of what you're doing as an educator to educate parents, your staff, your students. Have Facebook Fridays, she suggests, and help kids review their privacy settings with permission from the parents, of course. You just can't talk about the issue enough. And she also says consider multiple accounts for yourself and your staff so that you aren't introducing your private contacts and intermixing them with contacts with students and that kind of thing. She does encourage you to be on Facebook and to have a Facebook page for your school, but after reading her post, you'll be a lot more educated about how to do that and control the privacy issue as well. Mm-hmm. So if you're struggling with this issue, if your school doesn't have a policy about Facebook friending and about you know, how your staff should be behaving in regard to Facebook, maybe this is would be a good read for you.
Yep. I did use this resource. I saw that you forwarded it. I think this was through DIGO even, wasn't it, Sally? Maybe not. This weekend I was leading a workshop up in Appleton, and this was a resource that I used talking about the I think the challenges with Facebook privacy, that it's not always real user-friendly and not always apparent what the ramifications are of the privacy settings that you have. And there's probably application here for pastors and parishioners too, as you're thinking about that. And Facebook, I think, has an age limit of 13 or older to be on Facebook. So this is definitely going to be something that you would discuss with only, you know, maybe even just eighth grade or something like that. But
I've got students that are way younger.
Oh, I bet there are.
They are.
But they shouldn't be. But it's and that's something to be concerned with too. But I think there's some good practical tips here, and that whole policy thing is really important, both on the school level and the church level, church staff level too. That, you know, what are we doing there? What are the do's and don'ts? And maybe having separate accounts is probably a good thing. So, good article. All right, my pick of the week is actually a rerun of a pick that I made back in January of 2009, but since then this tool has changed its name and had some serious upgrades. It used to be called GTD Inbox for Gmail. Now it's called Active Inbox. It works on both Gmail and on Google Apps accounts, only Firefox and Chrome, and essentially it makes getting things done methodology a little bit easier to practice within the confines of Gmail. And remember, the big, we've talked about this in the past, the big tenets of GTD are the ability to tag and process email in a timely fashion, get it out of your inbox. And this little tool extension or add-in for Firefox allows you to tag things by project or by context or by both. It offers reminders. One real nice thing about it is it allows you to, with a click of a button, preview previous threads. Now, Gmail has that whole threaded discussion kind of concept, but you actually physically have to open up each one. This allows a little pop-up window to come up just to give you a quick review of previous conversations you've had, not just in that thread, but in previous conversations with that particular contact. So it's, I think they've done a nice job with it. It seems to work pretty well. One knock I think I still have on Gmail as a total GTD solution is it still doesn't handle tasks, just tasks that aren't emails very well, and this doesn't help you much there either. But I think if you do a lot of your work in email and you want to have better control over how you organize it and keep on top of it and create waiting for lists so that you don't forget what somebody maybe owes you as far as a response or whatever, this is a very good tool. It's free. There is a paid for version. I think it's like $25. But beyond that, I've been trying the free version here and using it for quite some time, and it's not. There aren't a lot of things in the plus version, which is the paid for version, that I would say would be, you know, must haves. But there may be for some. So there is an introductory video. It is activeinboxhq.com, and you can give it a try. It really is fairly harmless. If you want to uninstall it, it returns everything back to its previous state. So especially if you're a Gmail user and want to get a hold of your get a handle on your inbox, this is a good tool to try.
Very good. Can't be too organized these days. There's so many things coming at you from all different directions.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on. We want to remind our listeners of our final web training coming up.
That's right. I was just looking back at final web training from last summer, Martin, and had a comment from somebody who was in the class, and he said, I wasn't doing every exercise along with the class, but was able to take the time to work on what I wanted to spend more time on.
Right.
And I think that's one thing about the class. If you do decide to attend either Final Web for Teachers or Final Web for Dummies, you can certainly glean a lot from the information that's shared in class, but there's plenty of time for you to work on your own projects and ask questions and get assistance with you know, your own specific needs. And then this person went on to say it was also helpful to network with others and share information. And I think that was a big benefit of being in the class, is just meeting some other people that are doing the same kind of things you are and seeing and learning from the things they've experienced on their website. So if you're a Final Web user and are looking for a face-to-face class on the interface, you can certainly sign up. We'll be doing classes in New Ulm on June 27th through 30th and in Milwaukee on August 1st through 4th. And the classes are kind of two different flavors. We have a one-day session just for teachers, and the information is at bit.ly/FW for teachers. And then we have a three-day, more intense session that's kind of the beginning to end, everything in Final Web capabilities, and that's called Final Web for Dummies, and you can get information on that at bit.ly/FW for Dummies. So feel free to join us this summer for face-to-face classes.
And I would suggest signing up early. We have, at least if the past is any indicator of future events, we did have to put people on waiting lists last year, at least for some of the locations and some of the classes, so get in early to reserve your seat. Let's move on to community feedback.
And Martin, you are first up in this category you posted on our Facebook page.
We did.
Information about some training videos.
Yeah, we had talked in a previous episode about Microsoft products, Microsoft Office, and one thing that came up in my review for that show and then subsequent searches is some nice videos that Microsoft has prepared on Office.com. So if you're looking to get up to speed on any of the products, and one that I was particularly interested in was Outlook 2010, Microsoft has some great videos there, and we'll put a link to those in the show notes as well. But some newly minted videos that will walk you through. And I'm a visual learner, and I think these are probably the best way for me to learn, a screencast and somebody narrating and clicking and moving around and saying, well, if you do this, this happens, rather than reading through it and seeing screenshots. This is more of my style of learning. So if that's yours, this might be a good resource for you.
Excellent. Thanks for that. I'll add it to my tool belt.
Okay.
All right. Next up, we heard from David Schumann, who's at Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin, and he had an idea for us, Martin, for a future show topic. David writes that he lives in an area with a lot of rural members, mm-hmm. and it's easy to forget those people because at church and at home, we have high-speed DSL type availability to the internet. But not everyone is up to speed in that regard. And so he wondered about designing church websites to take into account people that are bandwidth impaired, and is looking for ideas along those lines. So maybe we can even dedicate a show topic in the future to that kind of discussion. We'd love to hear from our listeners how they address that issue within their congregation.
For sure. That's a tough one because Most of the tools of today do require at least a little bit more bandwidth than dial-up permits. So that's going to be a challenge. So great question, though.
All right. Next up, we heard from Mark Blauert, who is a staff minister at Trinity in Crete, Illinois. And he actually wrote you, Martin, looking for some policy-type direction.
Mm-hmm. Privacy policies, content policies, just best practices for putting information up on the web, receiving information from people. We do have some resources, and those are on our Wells Tech Wiki site and other locations, but there are we don't have maybe one definitive location, so there's just a bunch of different areas where we could provide information. So I think I'm just opening up his email. He was looking for all kinds of stuff: policy determining which links and web pages are permitted on the website, policy determining proper content, guidelines for maintaining web pages, access, password access for users, privacy policy or rights for individuals, minors, all that kind of stuff. So those are all great questions, and all questions that all of us that are responsible for websites should be asking and answering. And if you have those kinds of policies or have created them, let us know, or better yet, put them on our Wells Tech Wiki. That's wellstechwiki.wells.net. We have a whole section for that kind of stuff.
Yep. And our webmaster, Julie Duran, gave us some outside links mm-hmm. to a lot of different content management system guidelines, best practices, information on web privacy, password policies. And so we'll have a lot of links to share in the show notes, and we'll make sure and get those added on the wiki as well. Mm-hmm. So a good starting point, but I think something that we all should be doing our homework on.
Yep, it's not the fun stuff, but it's really necessary.
And speaking of Julie Duran, who's our wonderful Wells webmaster, she shared a couple of other interesting links that we want to make mention of in the show as well. One is to a free broken link checker. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a cool site. Mm-hmm. You go out, let's see what the URL is, brokenlinkcheck.com. You give it your website address, like for us, stjohnsse.com is our church and school web address. And you click a link, and it takes a long time to search through your entire website and check all the links on every page of your website. And when you're done, it gives you a report and tells you where the links no longer work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's such a wonderful automated tool. I found out there were 3 broken links on our website and was able to go and correct those. And so we can be confident that everything we're linking to at least lands on a valid page, doesn't go to a dead page any longer. So thanks for that, Julie. And the other gadget that she shared is one that's useful for converting decimal numbers to hexadecimal numbers. And for the geeks that are listening in the audience, you'll know that that's very important when dealing with web colors, because color codes need to be in hexadecimal format. Colors are typically made up of a red component, a green component, and a blue component. That's why they call them RGB, for red, green, blue. And each of those components is a number between 1 and 255, or 0 and 255. So you have to convert those to hexadecimal in order to feed them to your website. And so something like A5E742 might be the color purple or something like that. So with this little converter program, real lightweight little program, you can easily make those conversions. So if you're doing a lot of conversions, you might want to check out the DEC to HEX converter that Julie sent us a link to. We'll have that in the show notes.
Very good. Thanks, Julie.
And then we want to just touch on a few DIGO shares that came in this week. Jason Schmidt sent us a link to Adventure Learning from the University of Minnesota, just a place to explore, to experiment, to expand. And all kinds of different topics are covered there, from Greenland to all different northern locations is kind of what their focus is this year. So check that out. Martin, you shared a link via DIGO to Google upgrades for AdWords and yep. specifically for nonprofits.
Yeah, Google is paying a little bit more attention to nonprofits and making it a little bit easier to get into AdWords so you can advertise your site when people search on specific terms. They're upgrading or making it a little bit easier to get into some of their apps. There's a whole video there, so probably worth a look if you are using some of the Google tools already.
Very good. And finally, we heard from Nancy Marks via Digo, who shared a link to KeePass Password Safe, which is a password saving program. And if you aren't using one of these password saving programs, it's probably time to quit writing them down on the sheet of paper stuck in your desk drawer and go digital.
Or post-it so notes stuck to your monitor screen. Yes.
Thanks for that, Nancy. Mm-hmm. And then finally, just a couple of mentions. Tom Huseman and John Schussman both wrote us last week to tell us that our audio quality was really good on the show. And we greatly appreciate that feedback. And kudos to our audio producer there in Milwaukee, Mr. Martin Spriggs.
That's right.
Good job, Martin.
Yes, and I force you to turn your heat off during these shows. So
I'm always told
to that audio
that's
quality.
Okay.
So. Let's look forward to next week then. Sally, you came up with an idea that I think we're going to use for April. It has something to do with the weather.
That's right. You know that April showers bring May flowers, and we thought April showers would be a good theme for our April podcast. So we're going to depart a little bit from the norm and shower you with goodness during the month of April, starting off with our first show, a shower of webmaster resources. Now, we spend a lot of time talking about webmaster resources sprinkled all throughout our shows, but next week we will be consolidating and coming up with a master list of all good things for webmasters. So join us for a shower of webmaster resources.
I sense our Wells Tech Wiki getting better and better as a result of April.
All right.
Let's close the show. Gail, first of all, thank you for joining us once again. I know you got to run and do some teaching today. So thank you for taking the time this morning, and blessings on your classes today. Sally,
thank you much.
Oh, our pleasure. Good to have you again. Sally, thank you again for all your work, everything that you do, and we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Let's close the show. The music of Mike Wessendorf, Blessed is the One, from his new album, Undefined. Thank you all for joining us, and we hope you return and listen in next week.
Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord and whose confidence is in Him. My soul finds rest in God alone. Salvation comes through Him. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord and whose confidence is in Him. My soul finds rest in God alone. Salvation comes through Him. You alone are my salvation. My fortress, I will not be shaken. Blessed is the one who walks with the Lord and whose hope for life is in Him. The help and refuge of my soul, redemption comes through Him. But You alone are my salvation. My fortress, I will not be shaken. Troubled times you find me. Where does my help come from? The Lord is strong to save me, and I will rest within His love. You alone are my salvation. fortress, I will not be shaken. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, and whose confidence is in Him. The help and refuge of my soul, redemption comes through Him.